When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, where it's Derby Week, and it's an exciting time for the Big Blue Nation. And like it normally, I'd come in here, guns blazing, just all I'm thinking about, all I'm talking about is horses. But there's a lot going on in the world of Kentucky football, and we're here today to talk about it all, thanks to our good friends at Monticello Bank, presenting sponsors of 11 Personnel, where they've been in business for 128 years. They've stayed in business because at Monticello Bank, it's where people matter. They've got 21 branches in 14 counties across the Commonwealth. Check out one of their convenient locations or see how Monticello Bank can finance your future at mbcbank.com. Monticello Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC. Do us a favor, check them out, whether your business, personal finance, whatever it may be, Monticello Bank will make sure you're taken care of. Luckett, Kentucky's taking care of business on the recruiting trail, and I got to say, there's times in this business where it's fun, but we're rarely surprised now. I think it's fair to say that you and I were both pretty surprised Wednesday morning.
Yeah. for Marquise Davis, I just always assumed the visits would take place, and then there would be like a July 4th announcement. And so, yes, I was very surprised that that happened here on May 1st. Very, very surprising. Because he had given no indication that I don't think he was even close. There was just, I think there was a lot of writing on the wall, maybe reading. And then if you kind of dig in, there was a lot of Michigan buzz here lately, Nick.
A lot of Michigan buzz.
A lot of that was because he had visited there like three times in a couple months. But if you looked at it closely, he had visited Kentucky just as much. So it wasn't like they were pulling away. But Michigan had just hired Tony Alford, who was Ohio State's running backs coach, and who Davis reportedly has a good relationship with. And so that was, I think, where a lot of that buzz was coming from. So I thought we were headed towards a good old-fashioned slobber knocker recruitment here with Kentucky and Michigan. Going into July 4th and through June, but Kentucky was able to kind of really surprisingly land a knockout punch, kind of, you know, RKO out of nowhere, Randy Orton style. And so that was very, very surprising today.
Yeah. It was surprising because I think to your point, Luckett, all of the signs were there that this is one that Vince was going to get. And I was just a little hesitant to put in the RPM prediction because the guys over at the Wolverine who cover Michigan football 4-on-3, they've been speaking with him a lot. And, you know, naturally when you're talking to Michigan people, you're going to say nice things about Michigan, but the Tony Alford stuff was real. One of the reporters for the Wolverine, Zach Libby, he was at Cleveland Heights yesterday talking to him. And for this to happen now, I don't get shocked very often, and I was stunned that Vince Merrill pulled this off when he did. And the thing that's, you know, Vince gets a lot of credit for being Vince Merrill, right? Like, he is Mark Stoops' right-hand man. He plays a huge role in this program. But he's earning his money on the recruiting trail, and I think what really deserves credit here is that he did this differently than he handles some other recruitments, right? Like some other times, you know, recruits are really put on the spotlight, especially from the state of Kentucky. Like they're putting them out there all the time. This was a kind of sneaky under the radar move, one we rarely see from Vince Mero. He's showing some versatility in his ability to do whatever it takes to be able to make sure that Kentucky gets big-time prospects, particularly from the state of Ohio. And like that's the thing about Marquise Davis, too. He is the highest-ranked running back to ever sign in Kentucky. You'll say Stoops era because it's more modern internet stuff, but none of those guys in previous eras were ranked as high as Davis, who's number 183 in the consensus ratings. The next closest thing we had was Boom Williams, was 210. It varies from service to service. I think Boom finished 108 in Rivals. Davis is 113 and on three. So you're splitting hairs, but nevertheless, this is a huge, huge get over the defending national champs.
Yeah, and it's also in a place in Ohio that they not necessarily have had a ton of success, or the success rate is not as high in Cleveland as it is in Cincinnati, Columbus, and Youngstown. So getting into Cleveland, like, it's a big deal. I mean, that's a big metro area, and it produces a lot of good football players.
They were in on the kid, the tight end a year ago from Cleveland, whose name escapes me. He ends up at Ohio State.
Demarion Witten. I mean, Glenville is a lot of that.
Right. I think the only other guy, they got A.J. Rose and Dorian Baker.
That's pretty much it from Cleveland.
And that's very little on when you look at the scale of just how many players they brought in from the state of Ohio.
And Marcellus Jones lasted like a month in the program after transferring from Ohio State. And so that's a big deal. And then I believe the tight end, Brody Lennon, is from that area as well. And that's looking like their top tight end target and a guy they're probably going to get. And so, yeah, I think overall this Ohio class is pretty strong, 2025. So when you're Kentucky, you know, you get a strong Ohio class, you really need to make it count. And we're seeing them do that right now. That's what, four commitments from Ohio. You get a four-star receiver from Cincinnati and Quentin Simmons. You go into Cleveland, you get a four-star running back. You go into Cincinnati St. X, you get Tucker Caddis. You go in the Columbus suburbs, you get another quarterback. So they're in Brennan Ward. So things are starting to come together, and it's looking like it's going to be another big Vince Mero recruiting year right after the last one. And then the Michigan factor, like, this is a big deal.
They just won the national championship. I don't think we can overstate that.
It's not even just that. I think just in general, like, you look in that 2023 class, Nick, Carmelo English, Jair Hill, Brandon Hillman, Jason Hewlett, DJ Waller Jr., Jordan Marshall out of Cincinnati St. X. He wasn't that class, but anyway, they were going into areas where Kentucky recruits, and they were going head to head against Kentucky a lot. Not necessarily in Ohio either, like, you know, Jaden Smith and Charlotte, who now at Kentucky, but signed with Michigan. You go down to Phoenix City Central, you land Carmelo English, who Kentucky really went after aggressively. So they had really scored a lot of wins, and there was some, like, the Youngstown. They got two wins in Youngstown over Kentucky with Hewlett and Waller. And Kentucky really bounced back strong, I think, in 2023 with the Smith twins. I think they got a good break in that recruitment, those guys coming back home. That helped. But getting Brian Robinson was a big deal over Michigan. They were also in on Tyrion Nichols. That was a big deal. So you come back in this one, the first one, a big target for them, because – you look at Michigan's board, like, I think Bo Jackson's high on them, but he's probably going to Ohio State or Georgia. And so you get Marquise Davis, who's like their next top option there at tailback. It's just a big deal. And Michigan, even though the staff is gone now, right, Harbaugh, the era's over, but it's still a lot of leftover and kind of still the evaluations were done. This is a staff that just – they were the kings of talent evaluation. That's why they won the national championship. It's because you look at some of the players they got a ton of like 3- and 4-star guys that ended up being just like big time players. And so that's where they really made their hay. So when you win a 4-star recruiting battle, to me, against Michigan right now, it just holds more weight to me because of how they've evaluated. you know, Connor Stallion's joke or not, right? They have been the kings to me of talent evaluation in college football. So that that is a big time deal. And then I think you look at Marquise Davis and you turn on the tape, he's a Kentucky running back. Like, the top end speed is question mark to me. But he's 5'11", 200 pounds, north-south runner. He breaks tackles. He runs in between the tackles, and he's an after-contact king. So, that like, the fit is there from a play style-wise and what Kentucky wants. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this. And this could – we could look back at this and be like, this was a big moment. Because this could be the domino to get this class really rolling. Like, Steve Wilfong dropped –
That brings us to our question from our pal Matt G on the chat. It says, do we know who any of the upcoming Kentucky football commitments are? Have any ideas? And that is the part where I share with you, our lovely audience, that if you're on KSR Plus, you get the scoop. All right. And we've got this special offer, $1 for 2 months of KSR Plus with code UK1. And we've got Wilfong on the board. I mean, the number one recruiting insider in the country. He was posted on KSR Plus sharing some Fong bombs. And that's the part that I think is key here, Luckett, is how many times have we talked about being behind in the summer months? Now, they've got six guys on board, 2 4-stars, including like an anchor of your class. And now Wilfong, he put in prediction for Brody Lennon, the guy you mentioned, who Kentucky's battling Penn State and Pitt for. And then also Javion Campbell, who, like it, Campbell's just, he's a fascinating prospect because how quickly he seemingly ascended through the ranks.
Yeah, I still have to dig in a little bit on him, look at the tape, but he has the profile of a traits-heavy prospect, high ceiling upside, right? Look at this guy. He's this big, can move like this. Like, if it hits, he could be special. And we're seeing him really rise up the recruiting rankings. A lot of that has to do, though, Nick, with some of his interests. You know, Ohio State and Georgia are, like, making big pushes for him.
Ohio State did a lot in the last few weeks, yeah.
Yeah. They both have OV scheduled. But, Kentucky, you have to really give them a lot of credit. They have the state kind of locked down here in recent years. They're getting the players they want typically in this state. And a lot of that credit goes to Merrill. That's why he makes over $1 million. He's kind of locked down in state. It's why I think they're going to get most of these guys that they're in on in state. It's a safe bet. I think they're going to get Javion Campbell. As soon as they turn the heat on, make them the top target, they're signing these guys. No matter who's really going after them in state now. And that wasn't always the case.
No, to me,
that's more of a last 3 or 4 year kind of development. And so you have to feel good about what's going to happen there. And their track record is a good one here recently. They're signing these guys. And so Campbell will be one, I think. He's on record saying he's going to announce in July, I believe. It's like late July.
And Kentucky's getting that first official visit on June 7th. And like you said, he's got a few other official visits planned elsewhere. But I do think the fact that he attends Wandale Robinson's alma mater at Western Hills High School, that matters. I think seeing
it's also aspirations. He's working out with Chris Vaughn, so that Kentucky has a good relationship there.
Yep, you have the nil aspect too, where kid from the state of Kentucky is going to make more Kentucky than he would probably going elsewhere. So a lot going in Kentucky's direction in that recruitment, and it's exciting, Lucky, because. You know, there's no denying that the transfer portal has dominated conversation, both football and basketball, as of late, which they each closed tonight, if I'm not mistaken. I thought it was closing last night. I thought it was April 30th. But we're getting a few still trickling out, like Gavin Wims, the Owensboro kid who was at Rutgers. He's apparently going to enter the portal today. But the portal in general just took up a lot of oxygen. And we knew that Kentucky would get some players, but it would be relatively light this go-around. 8 departures, 3 from the receiving group. Not a ton that really jumped out to you. But you knew they weren't going to be very active, but you were just waiting for something to happen. And that something happened over the weekend when DJ Waller, who was a high school recruiting battle, one of those that Kentucky lost to Michigan for the Youngstown kid. It was a Merrill versus Klink battle. Klink has left, and then Vince swoops in as Waller's competing for that starting cornerback position at Michigan, gets him on a visit, secures a commitment. And like, I loved reading the reporting from the Wolverine on Waller, because it did, like, the folks on the message board wanted Jahir Hill to be the guy that won that starting cornerback role because he was the higher ranked guy. But it felt like Waller probably had the better spring. And a lot of it, I think, is because he's a very physical player who is not afraid to mix it up and run support, and who also has those athletic traits that Michigan was able to early identify and really hone in on in the recruiting process.
Yeah, and back to Matt G's question, if you had me guess who the next commitment would be, I would say watch Martellus Carter. That feels like one that was always going to happen before his OV. So I will watch that one.
He said as much, too.
Yeah. And he's a top 200 player. He would be the top, I believe he's ranked just above Marquise Davis. So,
yeah.
He'd be two top 100 players there.
And just behind Javion Campbell.
Yeah. And so, to Waller, just elephant in the room. Everyone knew they had to have corner help. Kentucky told you they were looking for corners in the winter window. They hosted like three or four guys on visits. At a time, it looked like they were going to take DeCarlos Nicholson, the Mississippi State transfer, ends up at USC. They were in on BJ Mays, UAB transfer, ends up at A&M. They were in on Marquise Robinson, South Alabama transfer, who ended up at Arkansas. So they were shopping in the winter window, but nothing ever came about. And then Waller happens like that, right? He goes through spring ball, enters the portal, is at Kentucky within a couple of days, and then commits on his visit. And so that tells you maybe there was some that they might have known that was happening for a little bit. And for him, Nick, I think there's still a method of, or an aspect of, go, we need to see him do it. It's a true sophomore, 3 years of eligibility, but he, again, three-star guy that Michigan wanted, back to my talent evaluation pitch the other day, or just earlier on this podcast. He burned his red shirt at Michigan. He was competing for a spot to start. He was going to play a big role regardless on this defense. And I think fit-wise, they have taken a lot of tall corners, 6'3", 200 pounds, or taken a few, or tried to find some. And no one has really stuck since the 2018 year when you had three of those guys that fit that profile, Lonnie Johnson, Derek Beatty, and Chris Westry. I think they're looking for that. I think this scheme kind of needs that. And I think he's a good fit there. I think you mentioned the physical brand of play. I think that's something they need at that cornerback position.
And which that might be a little bit of the Youngstown in him. Also maybe the fact that he played safety. And to back up what you said about him burning his red shirt, I mean, some of it helped that Michigan was kicking everybody's ass and they were winning by a lot, so he couldn't log a lot of reps in the second half. But the fact that he took to that cornerback position very quickly tells me there's something there as far as instincts and just having that readiness to be able to get on the field right away, to regularly rotate in. But to your point, there's going to be some growing pains. You just hope that they aren't as steep as we saw with some of the other transfers, like JQ Hardaway, who had a very similar recruiting profile, similar experience at Cincinnati, and transferred in after 1 year, who has that long frame that, and played for a big time high school that you just were waiting to see hit. We never really got that in year one. Maybe there is a light bulb moment for JQ down the road. But Waller does, if the athletic traits are there, then I'm pretty confident Kentucky will get him right. And no, he may not be Mr. Shutdown, but I mean, if you've got Max Harrison on one side like that, that's a great start. That's a great start.
Yeah. Well, I wrote about this week at KSR Plus. Join now for $1. I don't know how, like, if you're on the internet, I don't know how you're not with us over there. There's so much going on, football and basketball. So
it's
KS Board is worth the price of admission.
I mean,
trust me.
It is right now, like, just the threads, the stuff's happening. We had Ryan Lemon getting on last night after maybe some cocktails. Like, that was a wild ride. Matt's dropping scoop. I mean, it's just, there's so much happening. It's hard to keep up with.
And so I wrote about just the cornerback room this year. And there is an element, I think, of go out and prove it to them. But they're in a much better position than they were last year. Basically, just from an experience and option standpoint. Last year, they entered the year with really one proven commodity, and it was a guy that they probably would preferred to have at nickel more times than not. So, I mean, outside cornerback was just a big unknown. Mm-hmm. Hairston was a big hit, but he was not seen as that at this time last year.
No, not at all.
You brought in two transfers in J.Q. Hardaway and Jason Dunn, who hadn't really played. And then Jordan Robinson had been in your program a year, but you didn't know what to expect from him. Whereas this year, you've got an all-SEC corner coming back who played 700-plus snaps last year. You've got J.Q. Hardaway, who's probably going to be your outside cornerback three. He played 400 snaps last year for you, played in a lot of big games for you. You've got Jansen Dunn, who got some really important, I think, experience here at the end of the year, Nick, playing nickel against Louisville and against Clemson. And then you add DJ Waller, who played in a lot of big games for Michigan last year, was in a big program, is going to come in and probably be a plug-and-play starter for you outside. So just from that aspect, you're just in much better positioning there at cornerback. If something happens, Hardaway can step in. You've got Dunn, who's got inside-outside versatility. You've got Hairston, who looks like one of the better cornerbacks in the SEC. You're just in better shape. And that, I think, should lead to better play. And I also think, I tried to touch on this, it wasn't just the cornerback problem last year when you start digging the pass defense. Like, safety.
Yeah, yeah. The safety was an issue.
Injuries were a big deal at safety. They had, you know, Ty Bryant was a great story, but they had him out there playing in big SEC games. And, like, that was not on the script. That was a rewrite. The writers had to go back in the room and rewrite that script for the Kentucky football year because that was not planned at all for him, mm-hmm. I don't think, to play there. And Jordan Lovett had spent time injured. Jalen Geiger missed a lot of the year. So that was they need help, but I think both those positions are just in better shape, and that should lead, I think, to better play. I think you can make a reasonable, safe bet or assumption that they will get better play, and those pass numbers will be improved. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but I do think they're in better position there, and they adding Waller, I think, was the key to all of that because it puts everyone, I think, Nick, in the right place in that cornerback room. Like, you get Waller, who's a starter. You get him for multiple years. It's like an extended high school recruitment, but you have Hairston back. You got Dunn at nickel, which I think is probably a better spot for him. And then you have Hardaway as a high floor backup. And that's all you can really ask for, I think, in that room. And then you got a couple freshmen that you're high on, and Tyrion Nichols and Quayshe Scott coming in the summer.
It's not so different the way you laid it out there than our views of the Kentucky offensive line. Where,
yes,
especially like Gerald Mincy is what you had to have, what you needed, and then now it's like, oh, well, now we can use Cortland Ford as our swing tackle. Like, this makes sense for us, this fits. So you do have to feel a lot better about the roster moving forward. But you know, they might not be done adding to the roster because the transfer portal is closing to new entries doesn't mean you can't go get players who are already in there. And Kentucky's hosting one of those players today. JVR Suggs is the latest defensive lineman to enter our radar. He's from Grand Valley State, Division II program, has 2 years of eligibility remaining, had 7.5 TFLs, 5 sacks, and 21 tackles a year ago. He also has gotten a ton of interest from plenty of schools. I think I counted 37 schools who offered him once he hit the portal. But he visited Calipari University over the weekend. And then he's got a visit set up for Florida State this weekend. So It's one of those where you had quite a few names where you thought, oh, well, there might be a chance here. And there's just varying degrees of, ooh, okay, maybe. This one I'm not really sure quite yet, but it feels like it might be their best chance to land a defensive lineman before the summer starts.
Yeah, the competition is steep here. So, I mean, Arkansas, Wisconsin, Florida State. Like, so we'll see where that ends up. But in division, their Division II track record
hasn't been great. Yeah,
but
yeah.
This is a different type of recruitment. He's got legitimate Power Five,
mm-hmm.
where the Jordan Robinson, you're beating out App State, and I think Oregon State got involved there. And then Larkins had no one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was the most, that was pretty random.
And he never even made it to campus.
Went, yeah, he went JUCO, and then I believe he's at like a G5 program now.
The other guys where you've had these varying degrees, because Brandon Lane, it's like contact but not visiting. Then you have a guy like Colin Schley, the UCLA quarterback who visits. There's one other school in contention. So it's like, okay, it's kind of a coin toss. You know, where does he feel like he'll get the most run? And in that one, I get the sense that he didn't think he was going to be used very much because Brock Vandegrift can run too. I mean, it just doesn't.
Yeah, but it was the same situation at Virginia Tech. Kyren Drones is mainly a run first quarterback. He ran for like 1,000 yards. Not as good, not very raw as a passer. To me, Nick, I looked up. It was 7 hours from his hometown to Lexington, 4 hours from Blacksburg. I wonder if he just wanted to go closer to home because it was the same situation he would have been stepping into at both schools.
And so, Fair enough. That checks out for me.
So the I wonder if that was just what he ended up doing there.
The one that got the closest, though, which, you know, forgive me if we spoke at length about this last week. I think this happened. We recorded last week right after all the predictions flowed in, but it was – Penny Boone was going to Kentucky. I mean, we had the stories written. It was going to happen. But the cake had to bake a little bit. They had to figure out the academic requirements surrounding it. And frankly, they couldn't. There was a snag because he had too much ground to make up with credits not transferring over. Look, sadly, the days of just having enough hours to graduate don't count. Like you have to, there's some sort of structure in degree management. You can't just get a gen ed degree like my dad got back in the day where he just kept taking classes until they said, all right, just get out here.
We're
sick of you. Yeah. it was one of those, we were waiting. And then by Sunday I reached out and Kentucky was like, yeah, we can't do it. And, speaking with people who are in the know, Boone's camp really took him to the bone zone because I don't think his options were very limited based on his transcripts. And they had to kind of work overtime for 48, 72 hours just to figure out, all right, where can we go? What's the best place we can go? And is there one where he would actually excel? And right before we got on the show, it started trending that way yesterday, but UCF, biggest school in the state of Florida. It's the biggest school in the state of Florida for a reason. Apparently, it's not too tough to get in there. And for Boone, the credits and everything lined up for him, so he was able to find a spot. And I know there were some people, we didn't get it as much. It wasn't like the Big Z admissions thing where a lot of it was just purely based on the that was a UK issue, whereas this one, like I can't get mad at the admissions department. Like Penny Boone, like you had to have your stuff in order, right? There's other players out there who transferred to multiple schools in a short amount of time that were so far ahead that it didn't matter. I put that on Boone, and it specifically his agent as much as anything, because no matter which side of the story you believe, there's definitely some funny business. There's something going on over there, and
it was
he sloppy. Thought,
yeah,
like that was a very agents get fired for stuff like that, and he was almost up a creek without a paddle. So I'm at least glad that he was able to find a place to go, because Look, there was this real scenario where he was just not going to be able to play college football next year because he couldn't get in anywhere.
Yeah, I just... UCF's a commuter school, Nick.
Mm-hmm. No, just like Louisville.
It's probably just easier to get in a place like that, where Kentucky, yeah, being an SEC school, state, like state institution,
mm-hmm,
holds itself to a higher academic standard than I would assume the school in Orlando that's got like 800,000 undergrads. So that makes sense on surface. If it was a credits issue, him being able to get into,
yeah,
UCF.
I also just think that that's when you see more and more guys are going to have this issue, and I think that's going to help balance the tilt the scales back to the transfer portal madness. Where
we'll see.
I do wonder, like, is there ever, I don't want to say a tipping point, but like, I mean, the balloon's not going to just keep growing, right? Like, I feel like it's got to find some sort of balancing point eventually, and maybe this plays a part in it, right? Maybe this plays a part in it. But we it was funny, that issue came up a day after we were talking about it on KS Board for a basketball prospect. So it's one more and more programs are having to deal with, and I don't think it's not all on the school. Right, it's not all in the admissions office. It's also on the kids and moving around a lot.
Yeah, well, it's the problem you have when you are, this sport is, wants to be tied to an academic institution, but not act like an academic institution at all, right? To make decisions, right, that are, right, highly, you know, based, money based, but to still be handcuffed to this, like the academic calendar deal, like,
yeah.
2 years ago, Nick, Kentucky had issues because of the ad drop date in January about getting guys in the, like, pre-portal window. I'm talking about like when they were recruiting Javon Baker, and back then, that was because they are tied to, mm-hmm, these academic restraints when they really shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, balancing that, which makes the job, the roster building job, even I think tougher when you are being held to a different standard of rules than other your peers, right? That, mm-hmm, you're competing against. And so the Boone situation was weird. It was, is what it was with the, you know, you can only do so much, but,
Right.
But it was a situation I thought they would figure out, because it's just like, hey,
they've got a good track record of figuring it out too.
Yeah. If you want this guy, like, make it happen. But he goes to UCF. I like the fit for him at UCF.
Yeah, I'm going to run the damn ball, I guess.
Gus Malzahn scheming up the run game. He's got KJ Jefferson. He's got RJ Harvey. He was a 1,400-yard back last year in that system. Then you add Boone, who was a 1,400-yard back at Toledo, and a system that, you know, has some familiarity to what UCF's going to run. UCF could be sneaky fun to watch on offense because of that. And they play, you know, they're in the Big 12. They play at Florida this year in a big game. They're going to be a sneaky team, I think, to watch this year with Boone. I like the fit there for him. But for Kentucky, what do you do? There's been a lot of speculation, wondering what they're going to do at running back. To me, they were searching for a certain type here. I don't think they were just looking for a running back just to add a running back.
Right.
They wanted another big back, is to me what they were looking for, to go along with Chip Tranum. That's specifically what they were looking for. And they took two big swings, I think. One big swing at Damian Martinez. And then with Boone, I think they liked the potential of him being a kind of a 1B, 1A, whoever you want to slot there, with Tranum. And so that's what they were looking for. And so I don't know if we're just going to see them add some random 190-pound back who hasn't produced. They were looking, I think, for a proven commodity that fit a certain type of player profile here in this window, and they took two swings and they just didn't land any of them, either of them.
Look, I think I'm going to close the chapter on that part of this conversation and open up one on the NFL draft, where I think you were locked in most of the weekend, and I was thoroughly entertained by Thursday night. I enjoyed it. I still can't believe the Falcons took Michael Penix, but I enjoyed the first round. But did exhale and watch probably as little day two and day three coverage as I've watched in the last 5 years. Just a lot going on. But it was, it, worked out pretty well for the Cats, where Ray Davis is picked, first it was Drew Phillips to the Giants. Two picks later, you got Trevin Wallace. Ray Davis at Buffalo, and people really seem to like my tweet about Devin Leary replacing Lamar Jackson. But he ends up getting picked in the sixth round. Bates signed a free agency deal with the Chicago Bears that I think he's made a nice little payday in going to Chicago. We also had a few more free agency signings with Tavion Robinson to the Ravens and can't remember the last one. Flax. Where was it?
Vikings, I think.
Vikings. There we go. So overall, good weekend. I think if you're looking at picks and fit, I'll let you elaborate more. But the one I like least is just Trevin Wallace having to go to that godforsaken Panthers organization where David Tepper might be the most sensitive billionaire in the world. Taking off a dude's hat? What a psycho. That guy's crazy. So I worry a little bit about that when that organization needs a lot of help. But I love Ray Davis getting to play at Buffalo where he's going to have opportunities to play right away as a third down back.
Yeah. The first round, Nick, I think it was mainly wild because the Falcons was just like, whoa. But it wasn't as crazy as last year to me. Like last year, I don't know if it'll get more crazy than the draft we were at with the Texans trading up like they did. And then the Levis dropping like he did. That was about as and then you had a trade up for Dalton Kincaid, the Bills trade up for Kincaid. At the end of the first, so you had a lot of shaking and moving there, and so that. But this one was, you had some fallers, you had some surprising fallers. So this one was entertaining, but mainly it was just the Falcons. Like holy crap! But for the Kentucky fits, I think all three of the guys had really good fits. Like it was a really good situation. All three draft picks plus Leary. Leary's a little different because. I mean, he's just fighting for the QB3, And so for Andrew Phillips, the Giants secondary is like needs a lot of help. And like Phillips is going to play a big role just from the lack of help they have right there. They need a starting outside corner. They need a starting nickel long term. He's going to get a look at both of those spots. They drafted him and Tyler Newman, the safety from Minnesota, and both of those guys could be starters for them next year. So just from that aspect, it's a really good spot for Phillips. And they got a new defensive coordinator there, so a clean slate for everybody. I think it's a good spot for Phillips to potentially go in there and play. For Trevin Wallace, the Panthers are old at linebacker. Shaq Thompson's been there for 10 years. He's 30-something years old, last year of his contract. Seems like it's going to be his last year in Carolina. They just signed Josie Jewell from Denver for like a 3-year deal. Jewell's also a 30-year-old linebacker, so they're really old. So they need to get younger there. I think they double-dipped at linebacker, but Wallace was the big ticket item for them. He's going to get, to me, like kind of a glorified redshirt year behind Carroll, playing behind two vets, assuming no injury happens, and then step in year two, be a starter, and get like kind of a development year, which is kind of, I think, what he could use.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good situation for him there, and they could step in and be a starter there in year two, but he's going to play a big role year one at Carolina. So I think a good spot for Trevin. It's not like he's entering a stacked depth chart. They drafted him to fill a role. So I think that's a good spot for him. And then Ray Davis, I think you got to love the spot if you're Ray Davis. Buffalo, they lost a lot off that roster last year.
A ton.
And you look at them at receiver, they don't really have kind of outside guys. They got a lot of slots and tight ends, like Kincaid, Dawson Knox at tight end.
Why 12 personnel?
And then Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel. There's one player I'm missing in the slot that I can't think of off the top of my head. And then you draft Keon Coleman, who they're going to be kind of their big X boundary receiver, but he might almost be better playing inside in condensed formations. And so how do they kind of work that? To me, what it looks like, what we saw last year from Joe Brady, they got a little run heavy with James Cook, which I think was a smart decision because he's a good player. Cook is the clear number one there, but they need a number two. They signed Damian Harris last year to be that guy, and he got hurt, and he medically retired, essentially, after the year. So I think Ray Davis is going to get a great chance to go in and be that number two guy. That number two guy is going to have a big role in that offense. And then I think his pass catching ability they will use, Buffalo will use there, because they're going to have to get creative, I think, with the passing game this year. And so I think it's a really good spot for Davis. He can come in, be the number two to Cook. I think he's going to have a big role for that offense. And he's like, if you're looking for a sneaky long shot for offensive rookie of the year, like if something happened to Cook, he would be the number one back in an offense mm-hmm. that wants to run the football. And so that could be, he could have a big rookie season. So for Davis, I think he's stepping into a really good position. And really all three guys are stepping in a position where they're going to, Phillips and Davis are going to play a lot. And then Wallace mm-hmm. is set to be like the future for Carolina, I think, at linebacker as of right now. And if he has a good rookie year, they're going to roll with him, because that's where teams are spending their draft capital to find off-ball linebackers now.
Yeah.
It's that's most of them third, fourth, fifth round is where you find your starters, and Panthers drafted Wallace to be a starter in the third round.
I think he was the second linebacker taken?
Third linebacker. It was Colson and Edgerrin Cooper taken above him.
Love to hear that. We still got a ways until we're watching them on NFL Sundays. But like it, I'm curious what you think about your Bengals, because I got some good news for you this weekend, buddy. There's a horse that's racing at Churchill Downs this week. And I believe it's, where did I write it? I got to find my notes. I believe it actually, yeah, it's on Derby Day. And I kind of like it. I'm worried, though, about it, because in the Pat Day Mile, his name's going to draw a lot of money, and that's Houday. We got a Houday horse running in the Pat Day Mile, and I got one other name that you might like too, who I rarely bet. In last year, I think he beat me on Derby Day. Three Technique is running in one of the bigger races. I forget if it's
he runs Derby. Every year.
Right, almost every year. He's at Churchill Downs Oaks Derby weekend running in a big race. He hasn't won in a while, but Three Technique back for some more.
Yeah, the old reliable Three Technique and Houday. I will definitely have some type of wager for Houday.
Yeah, you kind of have to. And I believe Houday won. It's the second off his layup and layoff, and he ran a big number last time out. So that could be a nice price horse there for you if you've got your wagering apps out on Derby Day. I'm fired up. Obviously, it's been beautiful weather this week in the city of Louisville. We're buzzing, fired up for Kentucky Derby 150. I'll be out there Friday and Saturday in the infield near the first turn. If you're making your rounds, come say hey. I won't be shy. Maybe just a little out of my mind. But I'm going to be sharing my sort of tip sheets, like who I circled in the program as I was going through it. I'll be sharing that on KS Board. Really like the Pick 5 card for Friday. I don't have the best feel yet for the Derby, and some of it's like it is my reluctance to just want to say that the favorite's the favorite for a reason, and if Fierceness breaks clean, he's probably going to win, but he's been the best for most of his career. He's
not
a little
easy
inconsistent
to break clean in this race, though.
That's true, but if he's outside and get to the front, it's his race to lose. Sierra Leone's a big-time closer, who I actually know a guy who knows a guy who knows some guys around Sierra Leone, and they're not worried about the draw or the traffic, even though he's a closer.
That's called sources, Nick.
You're going to have to deal with traffic no matter where you're closing from, and Sierra Leone is one of those horses. You just see this horse in person, you're like, oh my God, how does that horse ever lose a race? Like, he is built very well. I wish I had great long shots to give out, but I still just can't kind of hone in on it. Honor Marie's gotten a lot of backside buzz. It'll probably end up being single digits by the time the race starts. Catching Freedom is another, like the Brad Cox horse. That's a closer that I'm tempted with as well in the Derby. But in the Oaks, I got an Oaks horse for you. Okay? Two of them. First and foremost, Ways and Means. This is one of those that, like, they just keep improving. I love looking at a program and see the horse getting faster and moving up on their winning position, whether it's from fourth to second to first, etc. Ways and Means is doing just that, is working out well. Like that horse, has posted some big speed numbers as well. And that horse is also second off a layoff. And the same applies to Just FYI. So essentially, in horse racing, a lot of times you'll race them as a 2-year-old, then you'll take a break in the winter. You'll be off December, January, and then they'll come out in March, race, get ready for the big race now. It's the second race where after they kick the rust off that you can expect a huge move forward. And Just FYI was the fastest of all the fillies, was a 2-year-old champion, was outstanding. And then but they were going to run it at Gulfstream Park. Horse got sick. They scratched it late last minute. And then they have to put her in the Ashland. And that was a very difficult, challenging race. Still finished third without being at her best. If she can move up second off a layoff, really like Just FYI there. So that's at least who I like in the Oaks. I'm feeling confident about that. I'll share all my picks for the week on KSR Plus, maybe a few others as well. Talking to some more people on the KSR YouTube channel tomorrow with some picks. We've got our Kentucky Derby handicapping guide with Pete Fornatel live right now. So if you need picks, we got plenty of them here at KSR.
Nick, you do all this research, but how much shooting from the hip is there when you get out there at the track?
See, that's why I just take notes like it. Because, these are not final picks. This is, and then I go and I have some cocktails and I talk to some people. I say, this is the one. Now, normally I like to have at least a Derby horse to say that's my Derby horse. And I'm not there yet. So that's the part where I feel kind of chicken bleep on, you know?
The lines can be long to make some of these wagers. So do you have a system or a process so you can get in and out?
Yeah, and a lot of it is, you can't wait till the last minute. That's a huge mistake. So you get an hour and a half between the Turf Classic and before the Derby. And so as soon as the Turf Classic ends, I just go immediately to make my Derby bet. I have to have it ready because I want to have some tickets in my hand. The other part is you got to have wagering apps. Naira Bets sponsors KSR this week. KSR25 is the promo code where you get deposit bonus and a $25 free Derby bet where, I always like to use those free bets on a long shot. So I'll do a lot of multi-race wagers for my phones, but you got to get some tickets in your hands. So
yeah, it's not that. Yeah. I'm the same way. It's different when you can hold the ticket.
Oh,
it's if when you go to the Vegas sports book, you want to hold the ticket. You don't just want to be betting on your phone.
And man, there's nothing it's the best and worst case scenario. Cause I've had this happen before where I always stay for the races after Derby and just let all the people clear out. So I don't have to deal with them all. And I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago. I had I don't know, $40 left in my pocket. So I put 10 across on Strobe and it was, 4-1 or something. So I made all my losses back and I stayed till the very end. And the people, they were counting all their money at the end of the day. And I was not yet. You got to pay somebody else out. That's a great feeling, having somebody hand you a bunch of cash and then leave the truck. So I'm fired up for it. I can't wait to be there. Here's my best bet of, I just handicapped the pick fives, the late pick fives on Oaks and Derby Day. My best bet, race 8 on Oaks Day. Number 4, Heavenly Sunday. It romped, and it's making its 2024 debut, but it romped in its last time out at Churchill Downs. 2-0 at Churchill Downs. Loves the track. Love the connections. Brad Cox, sired by Candy Rod. I'm just love this horse. Take it to the bank. Race 8, number 4, Heavenly Sunday on Oaks Day. Boom.
There you go.
Winner.
Lock it in.
And speaking of booms, we just had a boom, didn't we, Luckett?
We did. Kobe Brea is in the fold.
It's officially official. Hell, we might get another one.
Sounds like it. Ah. Busy times. Busy time. Head on a swivel season out there.
I was trying to think about it, Luckett. Because we've had some of these Derby Day commitments. I remember getting
Kevin Knox.
Yeah, that was the one. I was walking out of the infield and was oh, that came out of nowhere. Is Marquise Davis the most surprising commitment of the Stoops era?
I'd have to go back and dig in. Jaylen Brown was another one on Oaks night. I remember staying up watching, waiting for him.
That happened late. Because Josiah Hayes.
Think about it.
Josiah Hayes is up there for me because we kind of all assumed he was going to Ole Miss, and Charmin kind of pulled out the chair from underneath him.
Summerall, yeah.
Yeah. Drew Barker, kind of, just because like it was still early and Spurrier was recruiting him, and you're like, well, Kentucky's not going to beat Spurrier. Just like Kentucky's not going to get Jason Hatcher over USC, you know? That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. That's a really good question. I'm kind of going through my spreadsheet right now. See if anyone really kind of jumped out.
Trevin, we just didn't expect at all. And I think when the commitment happened, we kind of knew, but that kind of came out.
It was building up, though. Like, this one just really came out of.
It's unprecedented. It's unprecedented is probably the correct term.
Yeah, Justin Rogers kind of popped in the middle of the summer or like May.
Uh-huh.
And there was still like, thought we were going to get him. You didn't know, but because of his ranking.
Right.
I think that one would be up there on the surprise meter. Like that they actually landed a guy ranked that high.
And then you had to do the whole, well, are they going to keep him sort of deal for all summer. That was not fun.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, I think he definitely feels like it just in the moment.
He got picked by a seventh rounder. Well, hometown selection. Good for him. Good for him.
He did. He's going to the Dallas, I think.
Hmm.
Cowboys got him.
I wish Dallas was in Tennessee, and I hope you have a happy Derby week. It's a crazy time here at Kentucky Sports Radio. We appreciate y'all joining us on 11 Personnel. Go Cats and go Krogering, everybody. Let's win some money this weekend.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.